Hello and welcome to the Two Guys Three Consoles podcast. This is episode 50. Yes, we've reached 50 episodes.
Huzzah!
Hurrah! My name's Matt Leach, also known as the Leachman. And we have the return of my friend and co-host, Jeremy J. Monster Fowler.
Hello! How you doing?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing?
Yeah, not so bad. Thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it. It was strange not to have you here on the last episode.
Yeah, like I say, I know you're a bit cautious about doing one without me, but having listened back to it, you smashed it. And Ad, my mate, was telling me, like, I should have sent an email in, but then I would be like, but it'd be probably me that reads out my own email this week, and that'd be weird.
That would be a bit weird, wouldn't it? Yeah. Fair enough.
A bit meta for my liking.
Yeah, exactly. So you got a bit of a shout-out, haven't you?
Yes, before we go into gaming news, so on the way back from my assignment, Kyle had recommended me a retro shop in Tewkesbury called Retrosect that he had been in and sold his Ambassador Edition 3DS to. I think he traded it in for £375.
So wow.
They are probably selling it for quite a lot more than that, but either way, that's a lot of money to get for a 3DS. And he was on about how sound the guy was, and he having a bit of a chat with him because they both love Zelda. And I went in, and it's like Nerdtopia.
Sounds good. Might have to go there.
Yeah, you should. Well, he, when I was talking to him about the podcast, he was saying that he's got some sofas, and he's happy for us to do a live episode from there in the future.
Oh my God, a live episode!
Yeah, so we'd have to both get a fancy microphone for that, but yeah.
A live episode.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Something to bear in mind in the future. Maybe. But yeah, it had like umpteen like consoles, retro games, all of the sort of action figures and Transformers and stuff you can think of. I managed to get out of there only buying this Transformer and sorry, I'm showing it like the
which used. Transformer is that for people who it's, can't see it?
It's Warpath, which is an Autobot tank. And I also got a Nintendo GameCube wallet.
Oh, lovely.
And so managed to get out of there not spending more than £30. I could have, like, spent a fortune in there. In fact, when I was looking around at one point, Derek, my mate I was there with, was like, do you want to get a trolley? And I was like, oh, don't. But yeah, I could have, like, cleared the shelves. They had umpteen unboxed Transformers that I used to have as a kid. And they were all, like, £59 or higher. And I was like, I've got rent day coming up. I need to rein myself in and not go mad. So I managed to get out with only my two purchases.
It's like the original Star Wars figures and toys from the late 70s and early 80s. They are
loads of them.
If they're still boxed, they are worth an absolute mint. I mean, they were worth a mint in like the 80s, late 80s, yeah. Early 90s. It's been even more mint now.
I didn't see any boxed ones in there. You had a cabinet. And they're all unboxed in the cabinet, and it said all Star Wars figures facing this way, £10, and then the more expensive ones were like all facing this way, £15.
Right, okay, fair enough. I never actually owned any Star Wars figures, I don't think. I did have a
really,
yeah, I did have a Transformer, but it was like a knockoff Transformer, it was like a copy of a Transformer.
Yeah.
It could turn into an F-14 Tomcat, I think, and it could also turn into like a half robot, half plane, and then a full robot. So I don't think it was a Transformer.
This one that he sold me was a very good price, and he was like, I do have to warn you, I'm not 100% certain it's genuine. If you look at the writing on the back, and he was talking about he got someone that brought a genuine one in, and this one, and the genuine one already sold. And he was saying when he looked at the back of the two of them side by side, the writing on the back of the one that I've got didn't look right. Mm. But I consulted with Brad, and he said, how much did you pay for it? And I told him. And he said, well, I can't tell for certain without having it in my hands, but it looks genuine enough to me. And to be honest, the amount you paid for it is about how much you would pay for a genuine one at this point anyway. So it still ended up on the shelf anyway.
Fair enough. That's good. We'll put a link in the description of the Facebook group for Retrosect.
Yeah, and they've also got an Instagram, and it's on like a little industrial estate in Tewkesbury.
Okay. I'm not sure how far Tewkesbury is for Manchester, but probably worth a visit.
Considering it's about 20 minutes from Kyle, probably quite a way.
Quite a ways away, yeah. Fair
Yeah.
enough. Yeah.
But it's almost Midlands, I would say. So, it could be worse.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I just wanted to give him that little shout out because the guy was really sound, and we loved his shop and want to like just give him a little boost if we can do. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll move us into gaming news then, and I'll go first. Resident
Okay.
Evil Requiem is apparently the biggest download size in the series history. It's going to
Right, okay.
be set nearly 73 gigabyte to download,
Right.
whereas the biggest install of any of the Resident Evil game was Resident Evil 4, which was the remake, which was 58 gig. So Resident Evil Village apparently was 27.3 gig. Doesn't that sound right? Does it?
Almost well, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I'm going for the disc version anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I actually read this headline as it was the biggest amount of downloads. So I'm kind of just
Yeah,
reading the
that's quite
article
important.
on the fly here. But you can pre-download the game 2 days before it comes out, and then it unlocks at midnight on the 27th.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So yeah, you can do that, but I kind of misread that headline thinking it was the most amount downloaded, but it's just the download size. Oh well, never
Right, yeah.
mind. But can't believe Resident Evil Village it was only 27.3 gigabyte. Can't I'll have to double check on that. I'll double check on that and put a little note at the end if not right. But yeah. So yeah, so there's two campaigns effectively in Resident Evil Requiem. You play as Grace and Leon.
Yes.
So the Grace is the survival horror, and then like Leon's like your kind of like almost Resident Evil 4 original kind of gameplay. Definitely looking forward to this one anyway. It's coming, it's not long away now, a week on Friday, and it'll be out.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think I'm going halves with ads on Xbox because it means we pay like what 35 quid for it instead of like 70 quid.
Nice. I think I got it from Shop 2 for like 65 quid.
That's all right. It's not bad.
Delivered, which is not too bad. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I'm hopeful I can finish the game I'm currently playing before that turns up. We'll talk about that
Right.
and
Yeah.
what we've been playing. So, what's your news
Yeah.
this week?
So mine. Sorry, I've forgotten the Stellar Blade developer. They've announced that it's coming to other platforms, and bear in mind it's already on what PS5 and PC.
Yeah.
So the other platforms, surprise, surprise, are Xbox and Switch 2.
Yeah, not expecting Switch 2. Shift Up was the developer for
Right. Thank you.
Xenoblade. But yeah, Switch 2, I'd be interested in that. I mean, I've talked about Xenoblade before and how much I didn't really enjoy it, even though I put like 20 hours into it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it's coming to other platforms because it's been exclusive to PS5 since what, nearly 2 years?
Yeah, it sounds like it's timed exclusive.
Yeah, time exclusive to PlayStation. So other people get to enjoy it. We switch to users as well. That's good.
Yeah. So they've said there's more details incoming, so they haven't announced a release date or anything like that for the Xbox and Switch 2 versions yet, but they are coming.
Right, okay. Probably be this year, I would have thought. I don't see why not.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I would have thought so too.
Switch to getting all of the goodness, isn't it? I mean, it's about fucking time, isn't it? We had a Switch 2 anyway. We talked about it. It's gotten some good games coming to it, and you're going to be talking about one shortly. So,
Yeah, I mean, I think they finally started to get development kits for the Switch 2 into developers' hands,
yeah.
and we've started to see the results of that. That now developers have got the kits to make the games for it. All of a sudden, there's an awful lot of third parties, announcing games.
Yes, which is good.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, Resi 9 is day and date on the Switch 2, and runs at 60 frames a second.
Yeah. That is
So,
impressive.
so if it wasn't going halves with ad for the Xbox version, I would seriously consider getting the Switch 2 version. I know you're not fussed about third-party games on Switch 2; you're only getting like sort of your first-party exclusives on it. But
Yeah, pretty much I go for the Nintendo games on the Nintendo console. A very I think the way I double dipped was, no, I didn't even double dip. I bought Untitled Goose Game because it came out first on Switch. Yes. And then it was part of PS Plus, so I just downloaded it through that. So I didn't even double dip on that, but that was exclusive to Switch for a while, Untitled Goose Game. So, anything you can only play on a Nintendo 2 console, I'll tend to be interested in. But stuff I've already played and or stuff that's available on other consoles, yeah, I'm probably going to play it on a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox, you know.
Fair enough.
We haven't really mentioned it yet, but there was a State of Play last week.
It was.
Yeah, and there was some interesting stuff to come out of that. I know you didn't.
I think you and Kyle were more impressed than I was. It left me cold.
Yeah, no, fair enough. The one that I liked is a follow-up to Kena, Bridge of Spirits.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed that game. So there's a follow-up coming to that, which I'm looking forward to. And Metal Gear Solid 4 is finally coming to PlayStation 5 as part of the
Switch and Xbox.
Yes, finally coming. I mean, it's been locked to PS3 for years.
Yes.
I actually read earlier that the PS3 download version has been delisted. Not that you could buy it anymore anyway, because PS3 store's gone a long time ago. Right. But if you had it, bought it previously, and on a PS3, you could still download it and install it, which I did. I did have the digital version, and I played through it to the end. I may replay it on PlayStation 5 because I did quite enjoy Metal Gear Solid 4. It's kind of brings a Snake story to a conclusion.
But, yeah, I mean, along with Metal Gear, it kind of did have a big thing that it's sort of Konami have woken up from their pachinko sleep. They've been basically making pachinko games and not much else for like years. And then all of a sudden they announced like, what, a new Castlevania, your Metal Gear collection. I think there was about 3 or 4 Konami games there. There's a new Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
Can't remember off the top of my head.
I've forgotten the fourth one, but they definitely announced a slew of them all at once.
Yeah, I mean, about fucking time, Konami. Get your foot out of fucking pachinko games. But yeah, I thought it was a decent state of play, to be honest. And it was just over an hour long, I think it was. So yeah, some decent stuff in there. Some, you know, it just depends on your taste, I suppose. But yeah. So that takes us what we've been playing. And I'm going to kick off with Neo 3 because I played a significant amount more than I did this time last week. I put like another 30 hours into it. I'm like over 50 hours into this game now.
Wow.
There's no real story to spoil. I'm not really going to talk about the story anyway, but I do want to talk about the fact that I spent close to 6 hours to not consecutively, but in total to defeat one of the bosses.
Jeez.
What I did in the end was it's at the end of the first kind of time period that you have in the game. You have different time periods, and this big massive guy with a huge fucking spear, and I tried it. I just could not. I could get him down to about halfway, third of health, and then something just clicked in me where I just could not finish it off. What I ended up doing was I ended up offering up one of my Octocopters, or whatever they're called, to get somebody into the game to help me, and that's the way I did it in the end. So I did manage it, but that was after hours and hours and hours trying to do it. So, but he was the hardest boss up until that point. And I just got the trophy for getting to level 100.
Oh, geez, already?
already. So I've been running around the open world. The open world's a bit weird what they do. It's like a semi-open world because the time period that you're in, you can run around all the different zones. And then the next time period is like a different set of zones, but you can freely fast travel between them as long as you're not in like a boss fight. You can, as long as you've unlocked the shrine or whatever it is. And you have these different areas called crucibles. I think I did mention this last week, where they're like harder kind of yokai enemies, and a few of the bosses from previous Neo games turn up in these crucibles, which is quite interesting. There's like there's one, I think it was from Neo 2. He's like a fire boss. And he like runs around the arena, try and burn you with fire and everything. And he turned up at like one of the, I don't think it was a crucible, it was actually in a mission, like a submission. And I was like, I knew there'd be a boss at the end, but I didn't expect it to be him. So that was quite funny. And I managed to beat him second time, I think, because some muscle memory kind of kicks in with some of these bosses that you fought before. And you just end up just like totally, because I'm playing, I haven't really, because you've got two builds in the game. You've got a samurai build and a ninja build. Playing primarily as ninja, and I only transform to samurai when I use the big fuck off cannon that you can use to one shot normal enemies in the head with a big cannon. I don't play much as samurai. I pretty much play exclusively as ninja, because you have got the throwing stars, and you can throw bombs, and you can throw fire amulets, and you can zip around the arenas. And I'm playing on with dual swords. You unlock the ability to have a second weapon as well, so you can have two weapons. I mean, you have two weapons anyway. What I mean by is two melee weapons. So I only unlocked that in the last 5 or 10 hours, I think. So you can have like dual swords and a katana, or dual swords and a spear, or dual swords and a katana, or whatever combination you want. The problem with that is, because you invested your stats into a certain weapon, you have to rebalance your stats so you can take advantage of both weapons, I suppose. The beauty of this Neo 3 is, and this was talked to Carl about it last week, you can reset your points at any time, which is great. You can experiment with weapons and powers and skills. It really is like a ramp up from the first two games, and I've been enjoying it a lot. And I'm getting towards I'm right at the end of the second time period, and I've attempted the boss. The boss is supposed to be like level, it says recommended level 86, I think it is, and I'm at level 100, and I still can't.
Wow.
And I've rebalanced. I literally just rebalanced my ninja skills just before we came on to record. So I'll give it another go a bit later on, maybe. But really enjoying this game. Team Ninja have like excelled themselves in this Neo 3. I mean, is it a Game of the Year contender? Probably not.
No, all right.
It may be. I don't know. I mean, it's early on in the year, so but it's. It is a good. There's enough in there to make it is a really good Neo game.
Yeah.
Is it a game of the year? I don't think so.
It may be a good game, but not a great game. So then, maybe
it is a really good, enjoyable, playable game. But it's not like oh my god, like everyone knows my opinion on Ghost of Yote. But it's not kind of that level for me, you know, in regards to playing the game and enjoying the game. It's very good game, but it's not a very great game. So
so like good but not a masterpiece, that kind of thing.
I'd say that's fair. I mean, the Neo games have always all been good, and this is just another example. It's the best version of a Neo game that they've made, I think, you know. So what have you been playing?
So because I was out on assignment, I only had my Switch 2 with me. And so that gave me the excuse to go back to Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Remake on Switch 2. Do tell.
Yes. Which I put 29 hours into and completed it.
Oh, well done.
Thanks. And overall, it was a very good experience. The Switch 2 version is so impressive. It basically looks as good as the PS5 version, but it runs at 30 frames a second. But it's a stable 30 frames a second, so because there's no drops, you don't really notice it, to be honest.
Especially in handheld mode.
Yeah. Well, I was only playing in handheld. Didn't take the dock with me. And it does sort of remind me of how the Switch 2 battery isn't great.
I was about to say, how long did it take before the battery conked out?
Probably about 2 hours.
Right. Which sounds about right, to be fair.
Yeah. And so whenever it gets like what 10 or 15% when it starts to warn you like battery is going, at that point I would plug it in and put it down and wait until it's charged again to start playing again some more. But overall, the you know, the story and the game as a whole, I enjoyed. Yeah. However, the last two chapters of this game are an absolute slog.
They really are, aren't they?
Yeah. Like, so the Shinra building was in the penultimate chapter, was almost like a labyrinth to an extent. You had to get these sodding key cards because the one you had would only get you up one floor. And then when you got to the next floor, you had to like find where you upgrade it to the next one and do it again all the way up to like what, floor 64 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's just a gameplay mechanic to force you to fight your way through the Shinra building, basically.
Yeah. And I got to the boss, the Shinra dude's son.
Yeah.
And you fight him with his dog.
Yep.
And the way that fight was going, I was certain that was going to be the last boss of that chapter. And after beating him, you'd go on to the final chapter. And no, you beat him, and then it dumps you into this fight with this mech called the Arsenal, which you only get Barrett and Aerith, which I don't think I've used just them two together in any fight previously in the entire game. Because generally I took control of Cloud, and you know, Cloud's not there. So you're having to use these two ranged characters, one that's ranged with a gun and the other one's magic. And this fucking mech has got four phases.
Yeah.
And so the amount of times I got to like the fourth phase, die, and then you're back to the beginning again. And one time, I think I was whinging about it, I accidentally clicked the wrong button and clicked return to previous fight. So I had to beat the fucking Shinra guy again.
Oh, no.
Because it had been auto-saved on the Shinra guy, so I couldn't like go back to the mech again. And I was like, oh, I've already done this guy, and I've got to do it again. At this point, I had a cob on, to be honest. I was not overly happy with what's going on. And then I finally did that, and then you've got the sodding like race chase sequence away from the Shinra building, and there's another fucking mech boss that you have to fight while you're on the bike.
Yeah.
And thankfully, this hasn't got multiple phases, but it was still a massive pain in the ass.
Yeah, I died quite a few times on that section.
Yeah, it's fucking horrendous.
Yeah, not enjoyable.
No, didn't enjoy it at all. And then eventually you fight these, whatever they're called. They're supposed to be like other versions of Cloud, Tifa, and Barrett from the future. So one of them's got a sword, one of them's got a gun, one of them's got hand-to-hand. I forget what they call them now, but they've got some bizarre name. And then after that, you fight Sephiroth. Yeah. The one thing I will say, this game presumes an awful lot. It presumes you're coming off the back of having played the original version of the game.
Yeah.
And you know everything that's going on. So they don't really tell you much about who Sephiroth is. Like, basically, the new game, the new player experience from the remake is not the best because the game presumes you know an awful lot of it. Those little whisper things that kept turning up and changing things, I didn't realize until, like, literally after I'd finished the game that they're doing it to make sure you don't stray from the plot of the original game too much in the remake.
No, that's what they're there for. Yeah, but you don't know that because you're not explicitly told it.
No, they don't explain that at all. And they've got this Zack guy who's from Crisis Core, and again, who they didn't explain who... I've never played Crisis Core. They didn't explain who he is. Or what. Like, there was an awful lot of, like, you already know this, so we're not going to explain it to you.
Yeah. Yeah, they do assume that you are familiar with the, you know, the plot of the original game, which is a bit presumptuous, really, because, you know, a lot of people who played Remake wouldn't have even been born when the original one came out. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I enjoyed Remake. The bit I didn't enjoy is it chapter 11 or 12, where you have to go into the arena and fight all those bosses one after the other.
Oh, yeah, they love a good boss gauntlet, don't they? But
That house really pissed me off. The house that you got to fight.
Yeah.
Because what I was intending to do was I imported my save to the PS5 version, and I was going to try and complete the game on hard mode.
Right.
And I couldn't get past that house on hard mode. I just couldn't do it.
I'm not surprised. Like, it is a pain in the ass. Like, having a house as a boss fight is just weird.
It comes from the original game. If you go back to the original game, they redid it in a modern version. In you know, because you do this the same thing in the original game. Which, hands up, I never finished the original game. I never got past the first disc because I was very impatient in those days, where you had to run up and down the staircase to the fucking, I can't even remember what part it was, and just like every five steps there was a battle. I'm like,
yeah.
I wasn't used to the Japanese RPGs in those days, so I was getting really pissed off.
The original's fucking turn-based, so I'd done about 15 minutes of it, and that was it.
Yeah, no, I didn't get past the first disc. My brother, though, he played to completion, and I went round to his flat one day. This is like late 97, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 98? Can't remember, whatever. Mm. And he was breeding chocobos, and they were like in this flying airship. I'm like, what the fuck is all this about?
Yeah. I didn't do masses of the side quests in Remake.
Yeah, you don't really have to in Remake. You have to in Rebirth. You have no choice.
Right. Enjoy. Well, this was going to say, so I did the find the chocobos side quest. I remember doing that one. But I have to admit, an awful lot of the side quests, I just skipped it, didn't bother. But although I enjoyed the game overall, the last two chapters were enough to persuade me that I don't want to play Rebirth.
No, fair enough.
I am done. That's it for me.
Fair enough. I mean, is Rebirth coming to Switch too?
Yes, it comes out in June.
Yeah, so like I've mentioned on here before, I have played it, Rebirth, but I didn't finish it. Mm. There's a chapter that you get to, it's late, very late in the game, and it's basically like a 3D shifting labyrinth, I think.
Yeah.
And by that point, I played it for 75 hours. I just wanted to get to the end, and I just switched it off. I've not been back to it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, they bring out on Switch 2 in June. There's rumours that it's no longer going to be a timed PlayStation exclusive.
Oh, right.
And the third game they're going to release on PS5, Xbox, and Switch 2 all at the same time. That's the rumour.
Yeah, there was some umming about whether it was actually going to come out in this generation, but I think it will.
Yeah.
Even though the PS5 is, what, over 5 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the original Remake came out on PS4.
Yes.
And then they upgraded to the PS5. So there was some debate about whether it might come out on PlayStation 6. But now there's another rumor that PlayStation 6 might be delayed because of the RAM
shortage. Yeah, until like 2029 or 2030.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah, maybe 2029. Who knows? But it's a ways off yet. So, you know, we're not stuck, but we've got Xbox and PlayStation Switch 2 for the next 2 years at least. Maybe three.
Yeah, I'm more than happy that I have no inclination to buy another console.
No, me neither. But yeah, well, I'm glad you played through it. And apart from the last two chapters, it was an enjoyable game.
Yeah, like I say, overall, I enjoyed it. It's just those last two chapters almost ruined the entire game for me. They were that much of a slog.
Yeah, they are a slog.
And I have to admit, I have looked. Like, oh, well, maybe we could trade it in, but CEX only give me, like, bearing in mind it came out like what, last month?
Yeah,
they only give me £22 for it.
£22 for a Switch 2 game that came out a month ago.
Yeah,
are they taking the fucking piss?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were trying to sell Kirby Air Riders on the shelf for like 55, so I think they are. And I was like, well, for that much, if you're basically going to give me, because it was £40 brand new, wasn't it? So they're basically going to give me only just over half what I paid for it. Like about 2 weeks after I got it, I was like, no, sod it, I'll keep it. It's not worth trading in for that little.
I mean, you could try selling it on eBay.
I could do, yeah. But also,
if you could be bothered. I mean, I've not sold something on eBay for quite some time.
I have a little while ago, and I didn't realize that if you haven't sold a certain amount of things for a certain monetary value in the last 12 months, once you sell the thing, they won't let you have the money straight away. You have to wait 30 days to get the money out of them.
What? Are you kidding?
No.
I won't be selling it on eBay then.
Well, I mean, the thing is I sold because I could have done with some extra money that month, and because they wouldn't give it to me, by the time they gave me the money, I'd had another payday and I didn't need the money as much.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is why, I mean, I used to sell stuff on eBay a lot. When I first started selling stuff on eBay, what was it, like in late 90s, I think?
Mm-hmm.
it was you could get some real bargains then.
Yeah.
You know, I sold my computer on eBay and, like, you know, there was just no seller fees or anything like that.
No, they also, these days, they're wanting to use Nevery because they've got this big, like, they're big up, like, you know, you can have free shipping if you use fucking Nevery. Well, like, don't want to use fucking Nevery.
Because they're shit.
Yeah. Can't be asked with the emails I'm going to get from the buyer, like, oh, this hasn't arrived, or blah, 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 because fucking Nevery have screwed them over.
Nevery is every, by the way, for people.
Yes, who
are, including that Jeremy calls them Nevery because they never deliver.
Yeah.
Formerly known as Hermes.
Yes. Still terrible. No matter what name you give them, they're awful.
Worst career company in the country.
Yes.
Right. Are they international as well? I don't even know.
I don't know either. I've never looked into using them to send things abroad. I try not to use them to send things in this country.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Cool. Right, so we're into Retro Corner. You go first on this one.
Okay, so this one is not one I played as a child. And again, I'm holding up to the camera like the listeners can see me. It's Ghost Squad, which I got from another retro store, not from Retrosect, very recently for £5. You probably can't see that because it's quite small. And it's another light game gun shooter. And I think it was originally, it's made by Sega, by the way. It was originally an arcade game as well as releasing on the Wii. And when they first released it on the Wii, it wasn't a full price game. It released for $32.99 in the UK.
Yeah.
So, like I say, it's a light gun game and you can finish it in half an hour.
Wow, that's quick.
But although you can finish it in half an hour, it's got branching paths.
Yeah.
So you can, in theory, it's got a decent amount of replayability because you can choose, like, you've got different objectives in each section of each mission and you choose which one of the three you want to do. And then next time you play, you can choose a different one and do it that way instead. Derek and I were playing it briefly the other night and we chose the rescue the hostages, and I should have known better than to choose a rescue the hostages one with Derek because he's got history on things like Helldivers where the whole mission was rescue the hostages. He blew them all up.
Okay. Wow. Excellent.
So yeah, we failed that objective of rescue the hostages in Ghost Squad. But then next time I played it by myself, I did the defuse the bomb. And with that one, you have to remember, like, the order is, like, for the wires, it's like blue, yellow, red.
Yeah.
And then as long as you get the order right, that's it. That's fine. And on you go to your next objective. And I was like, well, we should have done that one. That was much easier. That
would much easier.
Much more Derek friendly than the hostages one.
Yeah.
For £5, it was pretty good. I think it's got up to 4-player. So if you've got 4 Wii remotes, you can play 4 of you. And it's got like a party mode and training, and you can like level up and like unlock like new guns and new costumes. It's pretty good for a fiver. I can't really complain. I like a good light gun game, and the Wii was perfect for them.
Right, okay, cool, good. That sounds a decent game, that one.
Yeah, I'm glad I picked it up for a fiver.
Yeah, for a fiver, you can't argue with that.
No.
Yeah.
What's yours this week?
So this is a game I played. I was racking my brains trying to remember which console I played it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered I played it on GameCube. This is a game called 13.
Yes.
Or XIII, the Roman numerals.
Yes. Well, I think it generally was pronounced 13, but yes.
It was, but 13, because that's the character's name, 13.
Yes.
So it's a first-person shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's based... Oh, no, it's loosely based on a graphic novel of the same name. Yes. So it is based on a graphic novel, but loosely based, apparently. Mm-hmm. I've not actually read the original novel. Original novel came out in 1984, apparently. Didn't know. So this game came out in 2003.
Yeah, it's cel-shaded, isn't it?
Cel-shaded, yeah. Mm. So the graphics engine is Unreal Engine 2.
Right, yeah.
And it's kind of presented to you like a comic book style format.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the game's presented to you. Like when you kill an enemy, this you see like frame shots of the enemy, like dying, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you had different weapons. Like you had, what did you have in it? It's 16 weapons: knife, bazooka, Uzi, M60. You had Kevlar gear. You could use bottles, chairs, and brooms as weapons. You know, that kind of thing. You could use lockpicks to unlock doors and grapnels to climb through walls. And he had like a sixth sense where you could see enemies or hear enemies behind walls.
With yes.
Like tap, tap, tap signal. Like.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I got this, not knowing much about it at all. I think I'd seen a trailer for it. I mean, this is back in 2003, so it's a while ago now. And I got the GameCube version because that's the console I had at the time. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed playing through it. David Duchovny of X-Files fame did the voice of 13.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting.
Mm.
The plot, I can't remember much about the plot other than that he wakes up and he got amnesia and he can't remember who he is, other than that he managed to escape somebody trying to kill him, and he's accused of assassinating the President of the United States.
Yes.
That's the setup of the game. And then you've got the authorities chasing you throughout the entire game and the plot plays out. I won't tell you much about the plot because I can't remember much about the plot. Yeah. But the gameplay was really fun, like running around, well, stealthing around and taking down enemies. It was very well done with the graphics. It's one of the first, like, kind of cel-shaded games, I think, in Unreal Engine 2.
Yeah.
And it released across all the consoles and PC at the time. So it was GameCube, Xbox, PlayStation 2, PC. And there was a Mac version the following year as well.
Yeah, so it's Ubisoft multi-platform, but for some reason I always think of it as a GameCube game.
Yeah, I mean, it was developed by Ubisoft Paris. I don't think they exist
anymore. No.
They might do, I don't know. Mm. Feral Interactive did the Mac version, apparently. Mm. But yeah, it was definitely an enjoyable game to play. It was a bit, because it was quite adult-orientated. I didn't play it when the kids were around, because Danielle was only like 2 years old at this point.
Jeez.
So she was quite young, so didn't really play it when she was around, just played it in the evenings when I had a bit of time. So they made a remake of this game for the Switch, PlayStation 4, Windows and Xbox that came out in 2020. So it's a full remake.
Yeah, it's supposed to be bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be not very good, which I haven't actually played it. I may play it because I'd forgotten they'd remade this game, but when it came out, it was pretty much not a lot of people liked the remake, saying it was quite a bad remake, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I saw a few reviews that said, if you've got access to the original, just play the original.
Play the original, exactly.
The remake is supposed to be.
Yeah, apparently. So it might not even be worth playing the remake if it was that bad, which is a shame, because I think you can only play the original on original hardware. Or a version, you could probably still play the PC original version on PC through good old games, I guess, would probably be the way to do it there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but no, 13 was an enjoyable game. I would like to read the graphic novel. I've forgotten it was based on that. Mm. And if I could replay it, I would. But yeah, that's my retro pick for this week.
I know Matt with 1T loved this game.
Yeah, he's a big fan, isn't he?
Yeah.
Send us an email about it, Matt. We need your emails. right, that's it for Retro Corner. And Platinum Watch, I've got nothing again this week.
Yeah, we've both got nada.
No. I mean, I'm on course to get Platinum for Neo 3, but I don't think I'll get it before Resident Evil Requiem. I don't think I'm going to Platinum, but I am planning to get it. And I'll probably play the DLC for Neo 3 as well when that comes out.
Right, yeah.
Because I platinum both Neo 1 and Neo 2. Nice. So I am planning to get the platinum for the Neo 3, but it might not be anytime soon, but we'll see.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that brings us on to the main subject for this week. And that's top three seminal games that inspired us or changed our lives.
Yeah.
And I'll let you go first on this one.
Right, okay. I was going to say that we've got one in common.
Yeah.
So should we keep that one till last?
Keep that one till last, yeah.
Yeah. So mine aren't in any particular order, really. I haven't really done it top just three.
In just order.
So my first one is Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, cool.
And this was the first game I ever really got into that got me into gaming.
So this was Super Mario Brothers on the NES.
Yes, on the original NES. And I got this with Duck Hunt, with the Zapper.
Yep. How old were you?
Like 7, 8 or 9. I forget. Definitely less than 10.
Right, okay. So this is like late 80s then, okay.
Yeah, it's like either 88 or 89, I think.
Right, okay, cool.
And so, yeah, this game just set me on a path of becoming a gamer.
And a Nintendo.
And a Nintendo head, yes, as well. And when everyone at my school had a Master System, there was a very small handful of us that had the NES.
Yep.
And it got to the stage where I could finish this game in, like, what, less than 10 minutes?
Wow.
Because after playing through the whole game, you eventually start to learn about the warp zones. And so you do the, I'm trying to remember, you do the warp zone to warp to World 4.
Yeah.
And then in World 4, you get into 4.2 and find another warp zone to go to World 8 and then go through that till you get to the end of the game.
Yeah. Do you think you could, if you picked up and played it now, you could still complete it in 10 minutes?
Possibly not, but I could probably still complete it.
Yeah.
Because the muscle memory from playing this game over and over was probably that strong that I could probably still do it, but probably not as quickly as I could do as a kid having played it to death.
Yes, absolutely.
And
I never played the original version of this on original hardware. I've only played emulated versions of this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the Duck Hunt, the Zapper only worked with the CRT, of course. It won't work with the TV I've got these days anyway.
No.
But it was quite good fun. If you had someone who came around and hadn't played it, you'd hand them the Zapper and be like, have a go at this. But it didn't have like a massive amount of longevity to play it by yourself, especially when you realize that you could cheat. If you sit like very close to the TV, you could basically just get every single duck.
Yeah.
Without trying.
Yeah.
So of the two, Duck Hunt had a lot less legs than Super Mario Brothers, but Super Mario Brothers is my first pick.
Nice. That's good. First one for me, in no particular order, Wolfenstein 3D.
Wow.
So this was early 90s, 92, yeah. I think, or 93.
Mm-hmm.
Walked into a computer shop, saw this running on. I'm like, what is this game?
Yeah.
I asked the guy who ran the computer shop, like, what's this guy? It's called Wolfenstein 3D. It's just like, just come out.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is it? He goes, it's a game where you run around as this guy called, what was his name? BJ Blazkowicz.
Yeah.
And you kill Nazis. I'm like, let me have a go at it. Then spent like the next hour playing it.
So, what were you playing on? MS-DOS?
Yes, DOS. We were playing it on DOS. It was a DOS PC in his little computer shop.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a little town called Barnoldswick, because that's where I lived at the time.
So really, yeah.
I was at college, what was like 18, 19 at the time. And they sent me down a path of first-person shooters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Doom came out a couple of years later after this, but Wolfenstein 3D is like, so I suppose, the grandfather of first-person shooters in that it influenced a lot that came after it. It was like, obviously Doom and then the Doom clones and Quake, and you know, you can all first person shooters, even modern day, can trace their origins back to Wolfenstein 3D, because it was absolutely one of those games that comes along every generation and just like fundamentally changes the way gaming, because up until that point I'd only played like 2D platformers,
yeah,
or RPGs, or even text-based adventure games. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There was nothing really 3D about any of those games from the first-person perspective. You know, you might have had like 3D games like the original Star Wars sit-down arcade where you went in the Death Star, you know, wireframe graphics kind of thing. Yeah. I suppose you had that. But you didn't really have like a first-person shooter being able to shoot Nazis with like shotguns and pistols and throw grenades and that kind of thing. It was a pretty amazing game, and
yeah.
It's one of those standout moments in your gaming history that you just think, "Wow!" You look back and it's like, see how far we've come in like the last 30 odd years.
But well, yeah, I mean, this ends up on pretty much everything. There's even a port for the SNES.
Yes, yeah, it ends up on everything.
I actually own the SNES version. Bizarrely, I don't know where I got it from, but I've got a cartridge only. I've not got a box or an instruction manual or anything. I've got just literally the cartridge and played it a little while ago for Retro Corner. And I mean, the SNES version is very, very basic.
Yes. It's impressive they got it on SNES, to be honest, considering it was based on an MS-DOS PC. Mm-hmm. It's impressive that they got it to work on a SNES.
Yeah.
I can play it on this laptop right now. I think you can even play it in a web browser these days.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny. So I might have to do that later. Because I've got, it is more of a nostalgia thing, but it definitely is one of those games that was influential on everything that came after it.
Yes.
So what's your next pick?
So my next one is Resident Evil 4, the original version on GameCube.
Of course, yeah.
And this one we've watched Lyrical about on various occasions.
Yes, we have on various occasions.
We even did a focus on an episode and things like that. But Mike, my friend, will tell me off again if I don't mention the fact that I think Resi 4 is the best game of the sixth generation. The, you know, PS2, GameCube and Xbox generation. For me, Resident Evil 4 is the best game that released in that time.
Yeah, I mean, it was, we've talked about it before, it was one of those games that came out and just like shook things up, especially for Resident Evil games themselves. Or
yeah.
Resident Evil 2 and 3 were very much going from room to room, avoiding the zombies, and then all of a sudden you're in Resident Evil 4, you're in this village trying to fend off these people who don't, you know, aren't really zombies, they're infected.
Oh, infected, yeah.
Yeah, so from the actual gameplay mechanic, very different.
Yeah, and I think I wasn't really a particularly a big Resident Evil fan before 4 came out. Like, the first few I could kind of take or leave. I had some of them, not all of them. But this one just completely changed everything for me. And also, the difference it made to the GameCube and its reputation. All these friends, mainly Xbox owners, were like, how's your Fisher-Price My First Console going? You got a new kiddie game for it. And then they came around and showed them this. And they were like, what? When's the Xbox version coming out? I'm like, it's not. And they're like, what? Like, they couldn't believe that this game that was so good that we were playing wasn't coming to their console.
It's an interesting time, isn't it, that Nintendo managed to secure the rights to get Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube and only the GameCube initially.
Yeah, I was going to say that it was an exclusive, in inverted commas. Then it was a timed exclusive because the PS2 version came out like 6 months later.
Yeah.
And I think that's to do with, because the GameCube install base was so small comparatively, for the stature of the game and how much of a masterpiece it was, Capcom weren't happy with the sales figures for the GameCube-only version, so then they released it on PS2. And unfortunately, even though the PS2 version is inferior to the GameCube version, it did outsell it because the PS2 install base was much higher.
Massive, massive amount of people playing PS2.
Yeah.
Yeah, and at that point in time, Xbox was a bit of an unknown entity for Capcom, so I don't think it was worth them programming a Xbox version of it.
Well, no, there's also the thing that the Xbox version, or the Xbox was dead in Japan for, like, years.
It still is, really. It never really got off the ground there.
No, like, I think when Xbox 360 released in Japan, it was getting outsold by GameCube.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but yeah, Microsoft never been able to crack the Japanese market, really.
No, like they did try. Like, they've got like a bunch of like exclusive RPGs and stuff on the 360. So they, you know, were trying to cater to the Japanese market to get people to get involved with their console, but just never really caught on.
No, never caught on. But no, yeah, Resident Evil 4 is a good one.
What's your next one?
So this is Splinter Cell, the original Splinter Cell.
Right, okay.
So funnily enough, I did end up playing this on GameCube as well.
I think some of the listeners are going to think that's sacrilege, because I've been told before that you almost have to play Splinter Cell on the original Xbox because it was programmed for that machine. So the lighting apparently was way better on the original Xbox than it was on the GameCube or the PS2 version, but right. I don't play stealth games.
Yeah, very possibly. I don't know. But a good thing about GameCube and Game Boy Advance at the time was you could use the System Link cable.
Yes.
Which I used for Splinter Cell, which would give you like a little map overview where you were on the level, which is pretty cool.
That's cool. I mean, I think all of the original Splinter Cell trilogy all came out on GameCube, didn't they? I
believe they did, yeah. I played the first one on GameCube, but ended up through various different means and how whatever, because I wanted to play Halo, trading in my GameCube and getting it. No, I sold my GameCube and bought an original Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
So I played with the subsequent games on Xbox, so that was Pandora Tomorrow and whatever, Chaos Theory, was it? I think it was Chaos Theory.
Yeah.
But yeah, the original Splinter Cell, and I mean, I was into stealth games. I've been for a long time. I played Metal Gear, solid on the original PlayStation, and really enjoyed that. And I played Metal Gear Solid 2 on the PS2. I think I did.
We never played Twin Snakes.
Yes, never played Twin Snakes because I got my GameCube, regretfully. Mm. But yeah, but no, this I like the premise of the game. You know, your fifth echelon or fourth echelon or whatever it was. I think it was fourth echelon. And you play as Sam Fisher, and you have to stay in the dark so nobody can see you. And like they had a little light meter, so like, you know, a bit like a fuel meter where you go up, the more light you were exposed to, and down, the less light you was exposed to.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And you had like a silenced pistol you could take enemies out with. It was so cool. It's just one of those games that came along, and, you know, a stealth game. Never been anything like this, really, where you had to kind of literally stay in the dark and wait. You spend a lot of time waiting in this game. For people to turn a corner so you can take them out at the exact optimum time, you know, and sneak your way around the levels and take out the people and without them to alert anybody and that kind of thing. But I mean, maybe it didn't necessarily it influenced a lot of games that came after it, but definitely it kind of shook up the stealth genre, I think, in my mind.
Yeah.
When I'm playing stealth games, it brought in that mechanic of, and people might be right, people might. The original Xbox version might have been superior to the GameCube. I don't know. I played it on GameCube. So
yeah,
perfectly playable version.
Yeah.
Back in the day when we had CRT TVs, we didn't have these bloody high definition screens that we've got now, nothing like that. And I'm waiting for a new Splinter Cell game from Ubisoft, but I might be waiting for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've done... So one of my ex-flatmates was into them, and he had... Is it Blacklist?
Blacklist, yeah. That was the last one that came out in 2013 on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox One. Xbox 360.
So, yeah, it's like 13 years old.
Yeah, it's old now. It's a good game, that. I enjoyed Blacklist. I didn't get the platinum, but I really enjoyed playing through it. I played through it fully, and it is a really enjoyable game. Different guy playing Sam Fisher, not Michael Ironside. They've got a different voice actor.
All right.
But it's an enjoyable game. I enjoyed the story. Yeah. I enjoyed the gameplay. But that's like the last full console game that came out on the Splinter Cell series. They're saying they are working on one. And they're still working on one, apparently. But they've been saying that for a few years. And
well, I say there's certain games that Ubisoft are not quick with. They're trying to say they're still working on Beyond Good and Evil 2.
That game's been like in development for more than 20 years at this point.
Yeah, crazy.
Ridiculous. Like, what's taken so long?
Mm.
Like, it's been not cancelled, it's been rebooted development-wise so many times. You know, the original version of it has just gone lost, I think.
Yeah, I think it doesn't help that, what's the guy, is it Mikel Ansel or something?
Something like that.
He'd left the gaming industry and went to start a wildlife sanctuary or something.
Yeah.
So I think if he's not working on the game anymore, and it was his baby.
Yeah.
It's not really sort of surprising they're stuck in development hell.
No, well, Ubisoft are in a bit of trouble, like we said before, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they've cancelled umpteen games recently, but then they've come out to say that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is not one of them. They're still in development.
And they didn't mention Splinter Cell, so I'm assuming that is still in development or there's a new game coming. I don't know.
No.
I'll have to see. But no, Splinter Cell was a really enjoyable game, I think.
Right, cool. So that's two each. And then let's say we've got one that we both chose.
We did.
And that is Legend of Zelda Link to the Past.
Yeah. So when did you play this? Was you still at school when you played this?
Oh, very much so. I was 12.
Right, okay. See, I played when I was at university.
Yeah. And this is like the 7-year age gap here, isn't it?
So it is, yeah. It's showing the gap between ourselves, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was my first Zelda game.
Right, me too.
Yeah, you didn't play any the Zelda 1 or 2 on the NES then?
I didn't, no, I didn't have them.
Right. But this game, I tell you, from the first moments of the title screen coming up, and the sword, I was like, I'm going to love this game, and I absolutely did. The mechanics of the game, the light and the dark worlds, the finding of all the different things that you needed, like the grapple hook and the compass and the spade, or I can't remember, But yeah, but you have to find all the different items, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Amazing game, Link to the Past.
Yeah, I think it's the first game I ever remember playing that had a map.
Yes. Like an overworld map.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And even maps within the dungeons as well.
Yeah. And so, like, at sort of 12 years old, this sort of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know it's not really a bit of a traditional RPG, but this was the closest thing I'd ever played to one at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, enemies respawned in this game as well, a bit like Souls games.
Yeah.
Like, you kill an enemy and they respawn, like, if you... You go back to an area like 10 minutes later, they'd all respawn.
Yeah, if you go back into a room that you'd come out of, when you go back in there again, they're all back again.
Yeah, a bit like Dark Souls, but not really.
I mean, it's not as hard as Dark Souls.
No, nowhere near.
I did finish it, even though I was only 12.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite... I remember it being quite a long game, but it's probably not that long.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed long at the time. It's probably not long by comparison to like games like Neo 3 and stuff these days.
Yeah.
But I think it took me about 20, 25 hours, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, what I liked about it was the, like you say, the RPG kind of elements of the speaking to different characters to unlock certain things within the world.
Yeah.
For example, there's like a boulder in front of a cave that you need to get into.
Yeah.
And you either have to go, I think you have to get the gloves to move it up out of the way.
Yes.
To get the gloves, you have to speak to a certain NPC at a certain time and either purchase off him or do some quests for him. I can't remember what.
Yes.
But yeah, it's, you know, then you get the gloves and you can go and lift the boulder out of the way and you can go into the cave, which leads you to another area. So I've never experienced that in a game before, really.
No, it's quite a strange game in that it's basically pretty linear.
It is very linear. Well, you go from point to point to point.
Yeah, but when you play, it didn't feel like it. It doesn't feel in here, that's the thing.
It felt like almost like an open world, almost, kind of, comparatively to the modern day.
Yeah.
And when you get the ability to travel, because you've got to get the 5 amulets, haven't you?
Yeah.
And then you get the ability to travel between the light world and dark world at will, which is pretty cool. You know, having 2 different worlds in the same game, okay, it's the same map, but they were laid out slightly differently. When you travel between the light and the dark world, that was the whole point.
Yeah, and plus when you first go to the dark world, you get instantly turned into a rabbit.
Yes, you do.
You have to get the... I can't remember the item is. It's like some sort of mirror or something, isn't it, to stop you from turning into a rabbit?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, when you first turn, you're like, you can't actually traverse anywhere till you get the mirror. But the boss fights in the dungeons are really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think I had trouble with any of the bosses, really. It was just a matter of figuring out what the pattern was. And literally, the item that they give you minutes before is normally the item that you use to kill the boss.
Yes, yeah, so say whichever item you got in that dungeon is the one you have to use to kill the boss.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you couldn't just get into the boss room, you know, you had to find the key to the boss room.
Yes.
Like there was a boss room key.
And the compass.
Yeah, and the compass and the map to unlock in each dungeon.
Yeah.
Which I'd not seen in a game before. I mean, I was playing this in between parties and or lectures, you know, at university. But I really enjoyed it. It was one of those games on the SNES that I absolutely loved. And still, I've not played it again since, other than on the Game Boy Game Boy Advance version, which I did play just because I could play it on a mobile platform.
Yes.
I didn't finish it. I think I only played about half of it. But it's on the NSO if you've got access to that and want to play it, because it is absolutely worth playing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it is one of those games that, you know, has influenced pretty much every Zelda that came after it, I think. Even the modern ones, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
You can still link it back to the Link to the Past, which is the first proper Zelda game, I would say, quote unquote. I don't know about Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. I don't know, because I never played them.
I mean, Zelda 1 is very similar to Breath of the Wild in that you can do anything in whatever order you like.
Right.
If you're good enough to do it.
Yeah.
But I say I never really played 1. And then 2 is like the black sheep where you can like level up.
Right, there's a leveling system. Okay.
Yeah, and 2 is like a side scroller as well.
What? Really?
Yeah. It's also supposed to be extremely hard, like Zelda, what's it called? Is it Link's Adventure or something? Is Zelda 2? He's kind of thought of as like the Dark Souls of Zelda games because of how difficult it is.
Really? Wow. That's intrigued me now. I might have to boot it up on the NSO app.
It's not aged well. Don't expect much.
No, I bet
8-bit games are very dated these days.
Yeah. Did you ever play any of the Game Boy versions of Zelda?
No, that's one thing I've sort of skipped. Like the only... Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
I did play that one, but I played that after Link to the Past.
Right.
And the two games are quite similar. Link's Awakening has a very similar art style to Link to the Past, but it's not set in Hyrule. You know, it's not the same. But apart from Link's Awakening, I didn't replay any of the others. Like, I didn't play Spirit Tracks or...
Phantom Hourglass.
Yeah, I didn't play that one either.
Minish Cap.
No.
That was really good, Minish Cap. I enjoyed playing that. Trying to think of the other Game Boy versions. That's all I can think of off the top of my head.
I did play Link Between Worlds, which, of course, is the sequel to Link to Past.
Yes. Yeah, so I have played Link Between Worlds, and I've said this to you every time you mention it. I can't remember if I finished it.
I definitely didn't.
I don't think I did. I think I got close to finishing it, but I never actually finished it.
It was good, but I didn't finish it.
Yeah. And I haven't played what's the last one that came out with where you play Zelda?
Echoes of Wisdom.
Yeah, I do fancy playing that one because I've not played it.
Well, if you do fancy it, now you've got a Switch 2 is the time, because apparently the Switch 1 version doesn't run very well.
Frame rate was really bad on it, apparently.
Yeah.
But really almost unplayably so.
Yeah, the Switch 2 version apparently plays a lot better.
Yeah, I might have to play it on that.
It's the same with the Link's Awakening remake. Apparently plays a lot better on Switch 2 than it did on Switch 1.
I mean, I've got Link's Awakening, and I finished that on the Switch.
The remake?
Yeah, the remake.
So did you struggle because of the frame rate?
A little bit towards the end.
Yeah.
I have to replay it on Switch 2 and see if it's any better.
Yeah, apparently it is again better.
Yeah, it must be. Yeah. Cool. So that was our top three seminal games that sort of changed our lives.
Yep.
And that brings us into the outro. So if you want to email us, you can do so to guys3consoles or letusknownumbers@yahoo.com.
Yep.
We've got a Discord channel, which is free to join. Links in the description.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. YouTube's audio only at 2guys3consoles.
Yep.
Facebook group, 2guys3consoles. My personal Instagram is mleach26 and personal Blue Sky is mattleach1.
Yeah, my personal Instagram is j_monster and my personal Blue Sky is jmonster, no space, no underscore.
Good stuff. So that brings us to the end of episode 50. Thank you for joining us, and especially if you've been here since episode 1 and made it all the way to 50. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll see you on the next episode.
Yeah, bye everybody.
Bye.
Bye.